You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The discussion around the current cost of living crisis and inflation has been primarily focused on an individual perspective, but that hasn't always been the case. I spoke to Toby Boreman, professor of politics at Massey University, who recently wrote a piece on the union movement of the 60s to 80s and their response to the economic issues at the same time. In your piece, you outline the parallels between the economic situation Aotearoa was experiencing in the 60s to 80s and now. What are those similarities?
Sure. So that period from the late 60s to the early 80s is called the Long 70s, and it was basically a period of chronic inflation, low growth in the economy, high unemployment, but also social polarization occurred between the left and right. It was a very turbulent era of change as well. So there's a lot of similarities. It was a deeper recession back then with higher inflation. I think the inflation averaged about 11 to 12% during that period. So people really struggled on a day-to-day basis financially.
You talk about the strength of unions, or at the time, unionisting around then was primarily focused on the fight to maintain living standards in the face of massive inflation, along with highlighting the relationship between corporate profits and inflation. Is a similar situation happening now with the Reserve Bank trying to induce unemployment instead of targeting corporate profits?
I think so. I think there's lots of parallels between now and then. I think the way the Reserve Bank is doing that is a real problem. And I think unions aren't as strong. So back then they were a lot stronger and they were able to mobilise, you know, in this country, in Aotearoa, hundreds of thousands of people in strikes against inflation. So, you know, if you're inflation was going up like 17% in 1980, so workers would demand 17 to 20% or even 30% wage rises and get them often through strikes. But now when this happens, you know, it's only 17% of the workforce is in unions today, and the strikes are limited to public sector workers like university workers at your university through the Teacher Education Union. You occasionally go on strike, but aren't as effective, those strikes. So back then, I think the major thing to learn is that unions can mobilise hundreds of thousands of people under that banner of defending living standards, because, you know, it really brought everybody together. They could see, you know, that their living standards were declining and the unions were trying to mobilise around it. Well, whilst today, unions aren't into a mobilisation strategy as much. Like, for example, the Council of Trade Unions, our peak body, our confederation of all unions in the country, is mainly a lobby group of Parliament seeking law changes rather than sort of mobilising, in my opinion.
What concessions specifically were unions able to achieve over this period? What tactics did they use?
Sure, yeah, well, I could give you a concrete example. So that mobilisation strategy, when they couldn't get employers who were, you know, concerned about their costs, and the state was highly interventionist back then, in wage setting, you know, had a lot of control over wage setting. So, for example, in 1979, the Muldoon government, which was sort of a right populist government, equivalent of a sort of Trump, if you like, intervened and passed the Remuneration Act, which enabled the state to cut any negotiated wage increase between employers and unions. And so unions hated this, and the state union as well, not just the public sector unions, the private sector unions, I mean, they got together and organised a mass campaign against it. This included a general strike in 1979, which involved up to 400,000 workers in the country, the biggest strike ever in this country. Then there was a Kinleith strike in 1930, that was in Tokoroa, the big paper mill there. They went out strike for 3 months, defeated the largest company in the country, the New Zealand Forest Products, and the government, and the Muldoon government. And then there was another campaign, and they actually got that whole legislation repealed. So they made the act unworkable. So it was basically a campaign of civil disobedience, because most strikes were illegal back then, by the way, as they are now. But they just went out in numbers, and the government couldn't prosecute.
You mentioned earlier, union membership in Aotearoa was at its peak over this long 70s period, reaching almost 50% of the workforce. However, union membership has created since then. What does the future of the union movement here look like?
Well, the union movement at the moment is predominantly public sector, which is, you know, government workers or government-funded workers, like in the hospitals or education or teachers. And predominantly female. And so, and that those jobs tend to be more secure, believe it or not, even though they're chronically underfunded, which is a big issue there. So I think if the union movement wants to move forward, in my opinion, this is just an outside view, even though I'm a union member, I think it really needs to look at private sector workers, trying to increase the numbers there, and also trying to look at a mobilisation strategy, because that really did bring people in the 1970s under that sort of defending living standards campaign. Because I think there's a lot of hurt out there amongst people. You know, people are really struggling to pay the bills. People are, you know, taking on extra jobs just to get by. They're doing massive cost cutting. You know, really struggling at the moment, I think. So there's not much to lose, in my opinion.
And I think a lot of the kind of conversation around inflation has been shaped by the media reporting around it kind of being this immovable factor of the economy, not trying to understand the actual root causes and where those come from.
Yes, I'd agree. I think the media reporting in general, and the mainstream media, is terribly poor. Like Stuff, for example, the Stuff website just promotes this sort of individualist discourse to deal with inflation. Of, you know, you need to cut costs, you need to grow your own vegetables, you need to do these side hustles, you need to look for another job, you need to ask your boss for a raise, or you need to move to Australia, all these individual solutions, which obviously everybody's doing because it's a tough time. Not everybody, but, you know, they're looking at various, mixing those things up, you know what I mean? So the media discourse has been, I think, quite poor, and they're not really thinking this is a political decision. Economics is political, they're always mixed in. It's very much a political decision, and, it affects people, particularly in fixed incomes, worse, you know, like pensioners, beneficiaries, which includes students, by the way, on student allowances, affects them much worse than people at the top who have got much more wealth and things to fall back on, if that makes sense. So, yeah, I think there's not much of a big debate about the causes of inflation. Back then in the 70s, you know, they really had to question profiteering, companies putting up prices. They called for price control, for profit control. There were consumer boycotts. There were so many collective actions that went on that are sort of missing today. That if this continues, this quite bad inflation, I think this might probably come back.
There is a comparison to be made between, you know, the oil shocks of the 70s and what's happened now with the supply chain issues as a result of COVID and the invasion of Ukraine.
Oh, yes, there's that massive parallel. Like in the 1970s, there was a couple of wars in the Middle East to that. Iran, Iraq War in 79, and the Yom Kippur War, I think, in 1973. After 1973, you know, the big oil shocks, they pushed up the prices of everything, the OPEC countries, which I think I can't quite remember the figures, but I think most prices as a result around the world went up 30-40% just as a result of that war, or the reaction to that war. So, you know, massive parallels, and, you know, that is a sort of supply issue, and it's an external one. So But I think a lot of people, the way the media portrays it, you know, as you said, it's just inevitable. This is what's happening. You know, batten down the hatches and just get through it, you know, rather than sort of questioning it, which I think we need to see much more questioning.
Like, yeah, there's a recent report around foodstuff suppliers coming out and saying that they suspect is charging a 50%+ markup.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. I'm mainly a historian, so I don't know much about the present as much, but I think, you know, there is a real problem with a lack of oversight of those big companies that can get away with so much as sort of just a duopoly, which is quite incredible in this country, you know, and they can get away with a lot because they know there's not massive civil society organisations out there like there were in the 70s and 80s, you know, around consumer protest. Yeah, but if you've got so much concentration of wealth and power in the hands of the few, I think you've got to expect a pushback.
Do you think that the new fair pay agreement system will empower unions?
A little bit, but I think it's a, you know, this is where my critique of unions today come in. I think they're aiming for a legislative, legalistic change to help them out and get more power. I don't think it would really help that much. It would increase union power in some areas where they could get fair pay agreements, which, you know, like minimum standards across a whole industry nationally, so that would help a lot of people and help unions, but they're not allowed to strike over it. So what happened in the 60s, 70s and 80s when we had a similar system where we had fair pay agreements called the arbitration system around the country, that the employers in the state through the court system would set wages quite low And yet under fair pay agreements, if they set wages quite low, a wage increase across an entire occupation nationally, so you're in retail or working in a cafe or whatever, and they put all cafe workers' wages up, but only goes up by 3%, inflation 7%, you're actually getting a wage cut, and you're not allowed to strike under fair pay agreements. So to me, it's a sort of a mixed thing. I think you need to be able to strike, because what happened in the 60s and 70s and 80s, and the 50s as well, actually, 1950s, was the arbitration court set wages so low that workers had to strike to keep their wages up with inflation. So I really dislike the fair pay agreement banning of being able to strike over wages.
Yeah, happened in the 60s, or long 70s, 50s, also the 1910s as well.
Yeah, well, that's why the arbitration system was set up. I mean, it was banned strikes as well, by the way. but they just went out on strike anyway, because, you know, the setup of the arbitration system back then, you know, you have three people in the court, and one would be representing unions, one would be representing employers, one would be representing the state, which meant that the state always sided with employers and set wages low. Do you see what I mean? So, yeah, having a system like that has its drawbacks. You have to really think about how it's set up. And wages, you know, like, for example, you know, the arbitration court set a 0% wage increase in 1968 throughout the whole country, called the Nil General Wage Order, and workers just didn't accept it. They said, you know, there were economic problems, the end of the long boom, blah, 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 can't afford it. But then workers just went out on a strike, and they organised a, you know, Wellington General strike against it, and various targeted stoppages around the country, and the meat workers, or freezing workers, went out and put an export ban on all meat produce from the country, and they got the mill order reversed. So there's a concrete example. They got a 5% increase across the country for workers after the arbitration court, you know, the supposed sort of fair pay system of that time, offered all workers a 0% wage increase, even though inflation was, I think, 5% at the time.
That was Professor Toby Boreman on the union movement of the long 70s.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.